So here we are, and the system is broke. American dream has gone up in smoke. So stop sitting there all brokenhearted. Let's get this motherfucking party started. Lady Liberty is ringing a bell, and we're driving us straight into hell. But don't worry, we got what you need. Crank up the volume till your eardrums bleed. Go and make America, America again.
This is the A Better Way to a Podcast. Yeah. We are your hosts, Jordan and Andrew. I'm Jordan. He's Andrew. Today we are here with Leo and Smedley Butler's ghost. That is his real birth certificate name that his mother gave him.
Don't question
it. I'm not questioning a thing. They're from the New York chapter of the Socialist Rifle Association, or the SRA, if you're trying to get people to check them out and you're not really sure where they fall on the political spectrum. I've gotten a lot of people to look at SRA pages, specifically the Philly SRA one, because they're always doing like the hoagies for the homies or whatever it is. I'll send somebody who's not, you know, far right, but is not a leftist by any means, or even really like center, that, and they'll be like, yeah, that's awesome. And I'll be like, they're socialists, or they're part of the SRA. I don't know if everybody's a socialist, and it's opened up a lot of, I think, at least a few people's minds to it. But anyway, this is them. Thank you guys for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
More specifically, we're the upstate New York chapter.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes.
We're not like those downstaters.
Yes, basically NYC and Long Island. Their laws are a completely different mess to ours, so we don't mess with it.
So it makes sense they have their own group of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And if you guys are listening at home and not watching on the YouTubes right now, you're missing out, because Smedley Butler's ghost is wearing all green. You can tell they're from upstate New York and not the city.
Yeah,
all green with a balaclava. And Leo is wearing. Are you wearing a shma? Is that
just a bandana.
But it looks cool. You got like a flat. I'm sorry, I'm looking under my phone, which is my webcam, to see your whole screen.
And it's like going down to like yes.
Hopefully I should be hopefully with all this green, I should be camouflaged in front of this.
Yeah. I only see eyes right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's the deal? Are you guys socialists? Are you communist? Are you a big tank? What's going on?
I consider myself a libertarian Marxist.
What is that? Cool. Can you explain that? I have no idea. Those are two things that I don't feel like go together.
It's hard to kind of explain, which is why I don't usually say it. Whenever people ask me what I am, I just kind of say, oh, I'm a socialist or whatever. Basically, it's kind of Marxist ideology, more focused through not a Marxist-Leninist lens. So other ideologies like Luxembourgism and so on and so forth. Here's the thing. I'm the worst person to ask when it comes to like defining ideology, because I really don't care much. I just kind of care more about praxis than anything. So when it comes to reading, even though I do have a decent amount of books here, it's been a while since I've read.
No, listen, I wasn't coming at you like,
as an organization, like what's y'all's approach? Are you like largely socialist, or is it just you just say that to attract like a variety of leftist kind of ideologies?
Well, the name Socialist Rifle Association began from like kind of a joke Facebook page, you know, because it's a take on National Rifle Association.
Right.
Then in, I believe, 2018, the group actually formed as a nonprofit group in Kansas. And ever since
that
then,
young.
We just stuck with the name.
I thought it was older than that.
I could be wrong, but I think that's when we fully incorporated.
Yeah.
And then we've kept the name since then. But internally, the ideology of the group is very big tent. So we have people from, you know, democratic socialists, socialist communists, social democrats, even basically the whole swath of the left is just kind of within the group. As long as you're not a bigot, an asshole, or, you know, a person who wants to do crimes, you're welcome in the group, essentially.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
That's kind of what I've been telling people, you know, for when people ask for safe communities to go shoot with, the SRA is usually my go-to. I can count on less than one hand the amount of negative experiences I've had with a chapter
right.
of the SRA. And that's frankly just because every chapter is individually run by individuals. And occasionally you're going to come into contact with someone like that you don't agree with.
I've found also that when other people, just like, you know, random people I'm talking to about it, have negative experiences with the SRA, it is actually the same experience that a lot of people shared at the same time
with the same chapter.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No. So largely, you know, I've recommended you guys to people all over the left and people who I would say are, you know, non-binary politically speaking. See what I did there.
But, that's certainly a way of going about it.
Yeah, you know, just because to me, based on what I've seen from multiple SRA chapters, it seems like a great place to go to meet people who are not going to treat you like shit, and people like you can help your community, shoot guns, and hang out with cool people. That sounds like a cool club to me.
I think what has helped me with the SRA, because I'm definitely a newer member. I've only been in it like 3 or 4 years at this point. Is that we definitely internally have our disagreements on what, you know, policy or what the implications of X and Y are, or, you know, political theory. But we don't lose sight of the bigger picture of who are the far right are the real problem. In the society and coalition building safe communities, mutual aid, gun safety. These are our big tent goals. And I think we keep on track with that for the most part. And that's what really kept me sticking around, honestly.
We're first and foremost an educational group. You know, we're here to teach people the basics of gun safety and how to use firearms. So, you know, spending X amount of time squabbling about the most minute, you know, differences that we have with our ideas and saying blasphemy, you know, it's not worth our time.
Right.
You know, we used to have a theory channel in our chats, but we purged that. We purged that after a few months because it did nothing but cause arguments on top of arguments. So really, we allow debate within the group, but basically, just don't be an ass about it, you know? And if you feel things are going to get heated, take it away. We don't want it, you know?
I was just having this conversation with a coworker last night. Very, very poignant here. Because one of my favorite quotes that kind of describes the tribalism in the political discourse arena is that the right looks for converts and the left looks for traitors.
Right.
Because the right will take you in regardless of how far right you are. Look at specifically Nazi groups. You know, they'll just find somebody from a broken home who might not even be right wing yet. And they'll latch on to them and so you don't hate Jews and black people? Well, we can fix that. Whereas somebody from the far left will disagree with somebody on, you know, 1% of their ideology, and it's a pissing match.
Yeah. Right.
And friendships are broken as a result of it.
It's a problem that's very constant. Purity testing and the idea that you have to have the right opinion there and then or whatever. It's like, look, if that were the case, then I certainly wouldn't be in the position I am now. Back in 2016, I had really, really stupid beliefs about trans people or whatever. But guess what? I grew. I got into a relationship.
Oh, you're canceled.
With a trans person. I got to know more trans people. And I understood, these are just people and they want to live. Okay. You know, people change. And especially right now, we need to be the arbiters to allow these people to change. Prod them with good ideas and challenge them where they need to be challenged. Don't just, you know, outcast them to the wolves and let them take them.
Yeah, honestly,
of course,
that's not saying
that you have to take in every like hardcore racist into your group. Some people are just far gone, you know. But to the people that you can reach out to, the people that are maybe sliding down that slippery slope that you can lend a hand out to, lend it out, you know. Pull them up and stop them from going down it, you know.
I can attest to this too, because I mean, like, probably like a decade ago, I was like pretty much a chud. Like, I had kind of like reactionary opinions about stuff. I was in some groups that I'm not proud of, you know, but like here I am today, right? And it's because people were willing to give me a chance and let me grow. And I realized the kind of anxieties I had about society and the way things are structured. It was like, I had a good sense of where things were, but the people I were with weren't telling me the truth. And I think that's the window that I think we need to get into, is that like, yeah, like things are set up in a way that's unfair to you, but it's not, you know, immigrants or trans people or the inner cities or whatever narrative they want to tell. It's the capital class. It's people that hold wealth, people that control the narrative. It's, you know.
Yeah. So, when you were in that position, like when you had those beliefs, what got the ball rolling in the opposite direction for you?
Honestly, it was like kind of a death by a thousand cuts. I was in like a lot of like kind of right wing content spaces. And I was never like full on like white supremacist, and I don't, like, at no point in my time had I ever like sympathized with them. I didn't want anything to do with them, but I noticed these spaces I was in was starting to become like really friendly to them, and I'm like, guys, these are Nazis, why are we talking to these guys, you know? Mm-hmm. That was kind of one of them. And then it was like things like Donald Trump in 2016. Like I knew this guy was trouble. I knew he was a problem, but everyone just seemed to like fall in line. Like he's the savior of America. He's going to fix everything. And it's like, he's clearly a douchebag. Like, he's not going to do any of that.
I mean, if you had lived in the state of New York for any amount of time, this guy's reputation was
infamous.
Already sick,
yeah.
You know,
nobody
this guy had slighted every business partner that he had ever been with. So he had to find a new group of rubes. And essentially, there was a large amount outside of the state that he could find, sadly.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was like a million little things like that. So where, and then it culminated in the pandemic, where I'm like, oh, well, like, it, what was the big thing that broke me was they were having all those kind of like fierce debates about stimulus checks and how much they should cut and what Americans should and shouldn't get it. And like Boeing came cap in hand, like, we need like $2 trillion to not go under. And they're like, yeah, here you go. And it's like, oh, I see how the game's rigged here.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I'm always just curious to, because I had a very similar experience where I was farther right than I am now. I don't know. I mean, I deleted my old Facebook when I got my job, thankfully.
Same.
Because it was fucking cringy. But I was like, I think I voted for Trump in the first election for him because it was him or Hillary. And I voted for the Libertarian, the
Gary
the
Johnson.
Guy.
Yeah, me too.
Gary Johnson.
I'm sorry.
Gary
Johnson,
gay,
I almost just
gay,
got canceled.
Gay.
I almost just got canceled. But I was that so anti-Hillary
an
that I was posting. I know. I fucking hated it.
I
love him
Gary
as a
Johnson.
Person. I love him as a person. I just hated what he did to the Libertarian Party.
Gary Johnson specifically?
No, Gary Johnson almost saved the Libertarian Party. It was the Mises caucus that wrecked it.
I know.
Completely
but...
and utterly poisoned that party.
I was just saying, like, the things that he said were almost too relatable.
Yeah.
For, like, for him talking about, well, I forget what interview
favorite,
that he
no,
was on,
thing,
but when the guy.
My favorite thing
Andrew,
is,
shut
like...
up. Andrew... Sorry. And like when he was on that interview with somebody and they were like, did you smoke weed? And he grabbed his chest and fell off the chair. I was like, I fucking love this guy. But
yeah,
it was like, you couldn't have a normal dude.
He had a charm to him, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. But
I think it was in 2020, the Libertarian Party, The Libertarian Party's Twitter account, national account, retweeted like on a something praising the Black Panthers, and the comments were full of right wingers from the party saying, "These people are fucking communists. You can't be saying this about them." Oh, the seething. And also the fact that they kind of maybe screwed Trump in certain key states because of their vote splitting. I don't know. I mean, if that is true, but it certainly pissed off a lot of people and it was fun to watch at the time. So I'll allow that.
But then you had like the New Hampshire Libertarian Party straight up retweeting the 14 words and shit like that.
Yeah, so I don't know who the fuck is in charge of that chapter.
Jeremy Coffin's
New Hampshire
in charge
has
of it.
Always been a cesspool when it comes to these kind of people.
The Libertarian Party. Jeremy Coffin. You can find him on Twitter. You can look at his face. You can see everything that he believes. It's all up front. He's a piece of shit.
There's like an open war between them and the Louisiana chapter.
Those guys. No, because Louisiana's based. Them and
The Libertarian Party, is definitely at odds with like their. I think the problem with libertarians is like the most honest, best faith, like the real libertarians, not the crypto fascists, but like the ones that really actually believe in libertarianism. I think their heart's in the right place. Like, I don't think they're bad people. I think they mistakenly put their faith in capitalism. Like, that's going to help at all, and all evidence to the contrary, right? Like, everything that goes wrong in our society today and all of the struggles that people have, like people not being able to afford homes or food or going bankrupt if they get cancer. I mean, at the end of the day, that's because some very small group of people stand to benefit financially very much from that.
So, in other words, it's all Ronald Reagan's fault.
So much is Ronald Reagan's fault. Yeah, and McCarthy, but
the
anyway.
The demon.
You know, if we could talk about some theory for a second here.
Sure. I'm going to bow out because I don't.
I'm
make it seem like I know what I'm saying.
I use that term to preemptively make it sound like I knew what I was talking about, but I'm actually asking because I have no fucking clue. I know in a perfect country, in a perfect society, everyone's taken care of. There are no homeless. There are no starving. And I don't think the way to get there is straight up communism. I also know the way to get there is not straight up capitalism. Is there, in your opinion, unless you do think it's straight up communism, in which case that's fine, because this is a podcast and we talk about these things. Is there a way to get to a place where people are taken care of better than they are right now, yet still let people feel like they have equity in their in their lives, like, you know, they, because the big hang up for me specifically is like personal property, not necessarily private property, like, you know, owning 1,000 homes or anything like that, but personal property to me, like, I want a fucking yard and I want to choose where I want to live. And that's one of those things that, like, you look at far left communist dictatorships where it's failed, it's like, no, you're a farmer now. And we're going to farm over here, and then, you know, millions of people starve to death. But is there a way in which, like, we can take care of our population at this scale of the United States of America and still, like, make people happy?
Well, if you want a more moderate form of that, then the Scandinavian system is one that can be looked at to that. You know, countries like Norway and Sweden and so on, they're not socialist by any means. You know, they literally still have monarchies there. But they culturally and economically believe that if we're going to, be these wealthy nations, then the wealth of this nation should be going towards at least making people's lives better to an extent. Like Norway, Norway was blessed with a large amount of oil in the North Sea. And one of the things that they did with that is that they didn't privatize it. They nationalized it. And because of that, all the money that goes from the Norwegian oil goes into a thing called the Sovereign Crown Fund. And, you know, that's billions upon billions of dollars. And all that is going towards basically the people in the end of the day. Now, there's questions about the efficacy of that, about that with, like, climate change. But it's just an example of one thing they do to help the people there. So, you know, basic things like universal health care, you know, better public housing. And, you know, that's just an option. If you want to live in public housing, good, you can live there. But if you want to, you can move out to a different place there. In general, just stopping companies from having large monopolies over certain things, as that's not good. Because even you can even make the argument against monopoly from a capitalist point of view, saying, well, monopoly stifles competition. Yeah. This isn't good. The market can't work this way. If you have a monopoly, then you can't have any sense of competition. So you have to break those things up. You know, in general, you know, certain things should just be decommodified, in my opinion, because the less you have to think about, say, oh, I don't know, your rent or whatever, the more you can think about other things in your life, you know, take up a trade, take up a hobby, or so on. The less you have to feel you have to feel stressed about getting just the necessities to living, the better you are going to be in your life. Now, of course, this all comes at the other big debate, is that, okay, yeah, countries like Norway and Sweden, all those like social democracies are good, but there's also the big conundrum that they also benefit from the cheap labor of people in the third world. And then you get into a whole different debate about whether or not that's ethical and what to do with that. You know, it's you know, you keep running into problem after problem. But in general, if we want to make things better here, I think, you know, taking back the old kind of New Deal policies from the past and reintroducing them would be just automatically better for us. And that's not even really that radical.
I think that, like, leftists tend to, like, have a pretty fierce debates on, like, the end state about, like, where they want things to wind up. But, like, where we are now, I think all of us have baseline agreements. Like, you know, there shouldn't be monetary, like, incentives behind housing or food or healthcare or things that, you know, that we need to not die as human beings, right?
Yeah.
Well, even not even just among, like, leftists, but, like, you know, I'm a libertarian, and even among me, even between me and, like, broadly, like, leftists in general, there's a lot of stuff that I agree with. Because, you know, I don't want to be under the government's boot. I don't want to be under a corporation's boot either.
Right.
So there's just, like, there's tons of common ground that, like, you know, if we can, like, get our heads out of, like, you know, oh, in 100 years, where do we want to be? Like, okay, this month, like, what kind of policies are we going to chase down?
I think, considering we're, like, kind of staring down the barrel of fascism right now, like, the arguments about where we're going to wind up in the ideal situation, I think, is an argument for another time.
Yeah, right.
I think we need to, like, work together to build a better now and a better future in our lifetimes, because I don't know if I'm going to see, like, Star Trek communism in, like, my lifetime. Doubtfully, right? But, like,
no.
Our goal as leftists is to try and make things as good as we can while we're around, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's always been the work, right?
The whole point is to leave a better, you know, generation, you know, better off than we were, which is kind of the opposite of the boomer ideology of, good luck to you, assholes.
Me and it's mine. That's George Carlin.
And that's kind of how I find.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I find my friends. You know, that's kind of what I look for, is, like, I'm not, like, testing people on ideology, because, you know, what I believe and what I do is not for everybody, but it's like, you know, the fundamental difference is, do you believe in human rights and do you want to, like, make the world better?
Yeah. You know, I can work with a conservative who says, yeah, trans people are like what they are, and black people should have their rights. Look, as long as you believe in people, you should be able to live freely. I can work with you. We can debate on other stuff later, but until then, I'll work with you.
That's I agree. And I think there needs to be more bridge building like that. But like you said, it's, you know, we can compromise on certain things without compromising on others. You know,
exactly.
I will not compromise on basic human rights.
Of course.
You can disagree with a person's decision to take to go through gender affirming care, but that doesn't mean that you should outlaw their ability to do so.
Right.
Yeah. And I empathize with, and it's becoming fewer and fewer, but I empathize with the people who are genuinely scared for kids because they are so misinformed because of the sensationalist media that has them convinced that it's a legitimate threat to the majority of kids. You know, and there's always a sliver of truth to these things. There's
media.
There's a handful.
Yeah. There's another term for it. It's called propaganda because that's what these 100% news channels are.
Manufactured.
Like if I could give an example, like in our state during the election, we had a proposition in our state called Prop 1, which basically was called the Equal Rights Amendment. It basically included a whole bunch of new things added into the protected classes, like women and their bodily autonomy, transgender people and gender nonconforming people, so on and so forth. And the whole thing was, okay, these people are now going to be protected by the state. So if you discriminate against them, you're going to be in trouble. Guess what the propagandists here basically said? They basically said they're going to put trans women in the bathrooms and in the football teams and stuff like that. They're going to take away women's rights. And that was the whole thing. It didn't work. It thankfully passed, unlike California, which voted to keep prison slavery. So, yeah, California, my ass. But, yeah,
it's
that's
really
what,
unfortunate.
Yeah, immensely unfortunate. And that's what happened here. Thankfully, New York is, you know, lib New York. So we had that pass through, and for the most part, we're probably one of the better states when it comes to being a sanctuary for LGBT people and women.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that.
You know, we have to, that's our, compromise, and our gun laws are shit because of that. What are you going to do? You know?
And it just like, you know, it's so weird because, you know, I believe really strongly that like, if you disarm a population, that, you know, it's going to be so much easier to subjugate them. And I can see that the right wants to disarm trans people broadly.
Right.
And I really struggle with, there's these places where, you know, being pro LGBT is part of a culture war identity for the American left, not like the, you know, the broad political spectrum left, but, you know, like Democrats. Right. But so is gun control. And I think that there's going to come a time where they're either going to drop support for queer folks or they're going to drop support for gun control.
Right.
They're going to have some sort of like soul searching, and they're going to realize, like, you know, it's going to be one or the other. I'm really afraid that they're going to take the more conservative cultural approach.
As we see it right now, there are some pundits that are trying to push the idea that, you know, it's the wokes, it was the transes that lost Kamala the election, which is complete horseshit.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She barely talked about them, and it wasn't a point there. You know, the right was going to talk about them no matter what. Don't give in to the right's positions on this because it's complete horseshit. But these people are fucking cowards, and they'll do it no matter what.
I think that it's important to remember there's a difference between being peaceful and being harmless. Like, the threat of violence, of saying, like, I do have a gun that I can use if I have to, is sometimes enough. You know, like, well, there was like a drag queen story hour in Texas. Was that last year? Were they? Where there was
last
a bunch
year
of,
or 2 years ago.
There's been a few.
There was going to be
like
armed
protests and counter protests.
Yeah, there was going to be a bunch of like far right people that were going to show up and disrupt it, and some Antifa people showed up in armor and rifles, and they stood outside.
That was the Elm Fork John Brown Gun Club.
Okay. Right. And it was like that was enough to get them left alone, because like the kind of like appearance of the potentiality of violence is like,
I think,
you know, sometimes
a great example
in itself.
Another great example of that was years ago. I can't remember the specific date, but there is a protest at Stone Mountain in Georgia, which is the place where the second Klan was founded, and it's also has that giant stupid fucking monument on it. And there's a bunch of neo-Confederates there, basically. They were armed, but also there was a coalition of a bunch of left-wingers that were armed to the teeth as well. And not a single shot was fired. There was a bunch of people who stole Confederate flags from the other side, which was funny. But yeah, both sides were armed to the teeth. They marched, they faced each other down, and no one shot a single thing. Everyone there pretty much assumed that, okay, if someone lets off a shot, this is going to be a massacre. So yeah, let's all calm down a little bit and just keep things, you know, kind of, I don't know, level-headed.
You know, yeah. I see this. I see this direction we're going in now, where especially now, since the election, where our page has blown up. Like the rate of growth that we've had over the last couple weeks since the election.
Oh yeah,
is like astronomical. And I hear the same thing about the Liberal Gun Club. The SRA is probably feeling the same.
I could give an example. Like me personally, I vetted in like well over a dozen people into our chapter since the election, and I still have like just under 10 more people that I get to vet in,
yeah,
you know, to schedule for that. So we have a lot of people coming in, and I would say more than half of them are queer, and just around half of them are non-male. So it's certainly leading in a certain type of people into it that are afraid of the situation.
You know, I never would have wanted it to happen this way. In a perfect world, people through rational conversation will come to the realization that gun ownership is a utilitarian like activity, and that it's for everybody. And, you know, just because you have a gun doesn't mean you have to go shooting people. It's just to have. It's like having an alarm system on your house or wearing a seatbelt.
It's like having a fire extinguisher. You almost never need it, but when you need it, need it now, right now.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And, you know, I see this shift. Speaking of, you know, what Andrew was mentioning earlier about whether or not at some point the Democratic Party is going to either drop the support for queer folks or guns. I see a lot of movement. I've seen a bunch of people, specifically from the queer community, talking about how they resent the Democratic Party because of their inability to budge on the gun ownership issue, and that they are specifically encouraging you as in the queer community, to remain defenseless in the presence of this encroaching fascist, this eve of fascism. They're saying, well, you still don't need a gun. I reshared a post from our local gun control group, Connecticut Against Gun Violence, who we've reached out to multiple times to have them on the show. And obviously, if our episode with Miriam is of any indicator, we could have a rational conversation with them. But they've never gotten back to us. They posted something the other day saying, essentially, we hear your fears, but they're unfounded.
Mm-hmm.
That there's no reason that you should turn to guns to protect yourself. And it just shows how out of touch these people are. Like it shows the immense amount of privilege that these groups must have.
Listen,
privilege isn't a bad thing. Privilege is a good thing, but you have to recognize that it is a privilege. So for you to be able to feel that way does not make it right to shame other people who do not feel the same way you do.
I think liberals make a bit of a categorical error when they think you don't need a gun because if you're in trouble, a policeman will come and help you, right? Mm-hmm. They have way too much faith in the police, which that's a whole conversation. But
liberals' whole ideology and religion essentially is this worship of institutions. And the fact that as long as the institutions stand there, then we're going to be fine. There's nothing to worry about. Well, what happens when those institutions have been compromised or just don't work for the people? Then I'm sorry, it's a contradiction here. These things either have to be completely reformed or you have to rely on yourself to keep yourself safe. And that's especially with the police. If you come from, you know, an African-American background, you know, I can certainly see why you would not want to call the police, given the fact that these people are trigger-happy motherfuckers who will just shoot you for no reason. But certain liberals just can't understand that because they say, well, I've had no problems with the police, so why can't you people call them up? It's just a disconnect these people.
They've had no problems with the police, but they've also never had any interactions with the police because they live in safe neighborhoods, by and large.
Notice, I'm white. pretty white, and I've had run-ins with the police, and I obviously haven't been shot, so I've been able to talk with the police pretty decently. But if I were someone else, you know, that could change the situation there. You know, it's just a simple thing like that. But certain liberals just, they'll pay like certain, you know, words to us, like, oh yeah, of course, police brutality, blah blah blah. But again, they just can't get it in their heads that it's the institutional part of it that is the problem.
Is it's like it's a faith thing, right? They have like complete faith in institutions working as intended. They assume that everyone else works in good faith, and that's why the right keeps steamrolling over them. I've had very frustrating conversations with like liberal family members who I love dearly, but they're very deferential to like the mechanisms of like the justice system and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, but here we are living in an example where these things are compromised and you need a contingency there. You can't just defer to the compromise system because they'll just continue to do what they do, but worse and worse, right?
Yeah.
And we definitely don't want to feel like we have to throw everything away as soon as something doesn't work as intended, but we also never want to be in a situation where we have no recourse but to rely on the systems that are not working properly.
Of course. And in like ideal situations, I would love to handle things civilly. And I think civil discourse should be the default for as long and as much as possible, but like,
right.
It's kind of just like if someone's putting a gun to your face, like, are you gonna like appeal to their better nature there? Like, it's kind of a frustrating unwillingness to engage in anything outside the kind of the guidelines, you know.
The gun is meant as the last course option. Sorry about me skipping there. You know, so the fact that people are running to that, you know, scatter of the mind says that something is fucking wrong here.
Yeah.
And unless you're going to, you know, say something about it, don't complain about the fact that people are going to the gun. Try and focus on why they're going to it, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah. 100%. We had this conversation with Miriam in the last couple episodes ago. She asked us why has there been such a boom in gun ownership over the last few years? And I think a large part of it is historically underrepresented communities in the gun community have been buying guns and becoming gun owners because they're feeling less and less safe.
I mean, during the pandemic and the summer riots, who were the biggest like percentage of people buying guns?
Yeah.
It was African Americans. They were first time gun ownership. I mean, that exploded. And also that was one of our other points in the group where our membership exploded. You know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I, you know, like I said, I wish we didn't have to get here through the means that we are currently in, but I also recognize things could be so much worse. You know, we are still at a point right now where the way I see it is like people are not getting rounded up at the streets.
Yeah, things it could always bad. Be worse.
It could always be worse. Things are bad, you know, if you are somebody or things have the potential to be bad. If you are, you know, a woman living in a red state that might lose her access to healthcare, or if you're a trans person that might lose their access to gender affirming care. There's, you know, it's I recognize as a straight white cis dude that it's easy for me living in a blue state of all places to say like, yeah, it could be worse, but like there is still time. I posted something yesterday. It was just, you know, my existential posting last night. It was of a polar bear staring out into the water. It said the all defeat until death is psychological, because there is always time to fix things. Mm-hmm. Until things are at the worst they could possibly get to, there's always time, and it's gonna suck. Struggle sucks, but struggle
so don't sit on your ass until things get too bad to the point you can't fix them. You know, organize and do stuff that you can right now. That's why we always tell people to join our group, essentially.
And it's not even like big picture stuff. Like, you don't have to become like some super soldier operator. Like, just get to know your neighbors, like build a community, like,
yeah,
you know, like how we're not, you can rely on when things go to shit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we're not telling people to go Ted Kaczynski and go into the woods and, you know, start declaring war on society. You know, we,
right.
we technically we can't do that because we're an educational organization, of course. we do not support militia activity here, just to tell people. It's small things like join a community group. If you can, run for your local water board committee or especially your school board. Run for your fucking school board, please. Don't allow these psychopaths to get into those positions. Let the book banners win here. I think we've seen in the past what happens when you allow shit like that. Things don't go well.
No.
Can we talk about the election for a second?
Sure. Absolutely.
There's a thing, just for like one second, just two sentences.
It's fine.
No, it's something I've been thinking about a lot because I needed to understand what happened. And I think what I've come to is that we live in a time where nobody trusts the institutions, like nobody. Left, right. Everyone knows that like these things are not working for them. And the Democrat Party has consistently run as institutionalists. So they present themselves, even if kind of like objectively they would be better for everyone broadly, they present themselves as untrustworthy people. I think people want to be told a good story. Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? Like, who's messing with us and making our lives worse, and how can we fix it? And unfortunately, the only ones telling that story right now are the far right. Granted, they're lying. Like, immigrants aren't making your life worse. Trans people aren't making your life worse. I think, you know, for leftists, politically, we're in a precarious situation. But rhetorically, we're in a unique position because we can tell those stories and we don't have to lie to tell those stories. We're telling the truth.
We're in a world right now that is craving populism. People are disconnected from power and they want a semblance of someone that can reconnect them to that. And that's why Trump, for all of his, you know, bullshitting or whatever, he has a certain charisma in a certain way that appeals to people. Whereas the Democrats run as this protector of institutional technocracy, blah, 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 whatever. So it doesn't even matter if the Democrats are better on union issues or whatever. It all doesn't matter because when it comes to the president especially, we now have to admit that it really is vibes based and people want a populist. That's why I would say, as much as it may sound stupid, unironically, run Jon Stewart in 2028 and he would win. He would fucking win because he has the gift of the gab that could beat any right-wing populist that they put up.
Yeah.
And not to mention his policies are pretty decent as well, so that's another good thing.
Yeah, he is a shit lib on guns, unfortunately, but...
Sure.
This is the thing. Perfect. We're at a point now where, like, things are more polarized than ever, and I think at this point we just need a rational speaker.
Right.
I'm not willing to budge on gun laws, obviously, but I'm willing to... We're not at a point in our country where electing an anti-gun president is really going to do a whole lot to hurt our gun rights. It's just not. It's not going to happen with the way that things are right now. It's used as, in the same way that the Democrats had multiple chances to codify Roe v. Wade and didn't. Right. They'd much rather use it as a fundraising opportunity than actually solve the problem.
Yeah, the right has been complaining that the New World Order is going to be taking our guns. Like, how many decades ago have they
for
been
20 years?
New World Order is real fucking lazy if it's been taking them that long to take away the guns and put us in the FEMA camps, you know? Like, Jesus. Yeah.
But it's a constant, you know, so that's like one of those things where I am comfortable with a president who is a left version of Trump.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting into office, and I'll say like Jon Stewart is a liberal. You know, he is a
capital L, like,
straight. Yeah, capital L liberal. But you look at him next to Kamala Harris, and like I would expect him to hold her accountable also. For like that's
Kamala is so fucking weird. she's not even like what I think of as like a mainline liberal. Like that was him, you know, like fucking Biden and Kamala together was such a weird, ticket at a time. I think it was a
conciliatory thing, especially for Kamala.
I think what we're keying off here is rhetoric. Like, you think about all of the times that everyone was energized for Kamala. It was like, they're weird. We're not going back. When she did,
it makes me cringe.
When she did the debate with Trump, and she made fun of how people leave his like his rallies like halfway through, and it's all he talked about for like a month. That's when people were jazzed up, and then like you get all these advisors and staffers come in to like make her be generic, and all the energy gets sucked out of the room. People
Hey, we got an idea that will really, really get our base up. Say hello to Liz Cheney.
Waltz on Jon Stewart. Making friends.
Why don't you stop talking?
Making friends with Liz Cheney is throwing a bone to the libertarians.
Yeah.
What? Okay. That's what he said. No.
Here's the thing.
Oh God!
Legitimately, whoever on her campaign or within the Democratic Party apparatus thought that that was a good idea, I was gonna say something would get me in trouble, but
all I need
to say is that they need to get fucking fired immediately because that is the most stupid fucking idea I could think of.
I just wish the people who are reviled by both sides.
I just wish the DNC wouldn't constantly reward failure. Like the last two election cycles, Biden in 2020 and Harris in 2024, like Hillary Clinton was on as a consultant. Why? Yeah. She's a loser. Who cares what she thinks?
I'm gonna answer your question very succinctly.
Her strategy didn't win, so why would you take that? You know?
They don't value results. They value the process. They value consistency and process. They don't care if you win or lose.
Oh, what? We're losing voters in Michigan? Oh, I have an idea. Let's send Bill Clinton over there just to basically scold them.
The guy who
went on Lolita Express is the one who's going to be guilt tripping us about not voting for Kamala. Give me a fucking break.
I go down these like conspiracy rabbit holes every now and then where I think to myself, there is no way in hell that the Democratic apparatus of billions of dollars and think tanks is so incompetent to be able to lose an election so poorly that it has to be engineered to occur that way.
Never underestimate the power of just weaponized incompetency. It is amazing, you know?
I go back and forth.
Out of touch. They are so fucking out of touch, it hurts.
I wouldn't agree that there's any kind of like controlled opposition or something going on. I like Smeagly said, they're just out of touch. They're just kind of pathetic. They're
it definitely seems like the more reasonable option.
I hate having to bring the man up again and again in these debates, but Bernie was the candidate who could have in a general election brought people who don't vote or people who are not as into politics into that fray. You know, he was that one candidate who could have done it. He was the person that had that populist appeal, that kind of crotchety-ness that was in like very fun and so on. He was the person that needed, but the Dems just would not have it. They didn't want it because even to them, social democracy is too far left of the dial for them, which is ridiculous.
More than that, Bernie was a guy that had not done his time the way that Hillary had done it. He was like an actual grassroots politician with real support from his constituents.
He beat his first candidate in, I believe, the mayoral run in Burlington by like one vote. Uh-huh. And then he became a senator. And he just built up his, you know, portfolio year and year on. And just to show you his ability to, like, reach out to other people on the other side to get their votes, in the early 2000s, it was not uncommon in Vermont to both see Bernie Sanders for Senate and Bush Cheney signs on the same lawn. So that just kind of goes to show you, it's like, if this guy can convince these people to vote for him, then this is the guy who will convince the people who would have voted for Donald Trump to vote for him. Because he's genuine in his things.
If you want empirical evidence of this, you can look at in-app data of small dollar donations in the 2016 primaries. Bernie sweeps almost the entire country, including hard red states.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're thinking, why didn't Democrats who participated in the primaries get out and vote in the general election? What could anyone have done?
They operate on this delusion that having radical ideas will lose you elections.
But that's when the policies that you're up against are becoming more radical, you need to fight that by being apparently radical. You can't win against radicalism with milk toast. It's not going to work.
I don't necessarily think that worked in the past at all. We look at elections in Italy during the 1920s. Didn't work.
Yeah.
We look at Germany. Yeah. Didn't work. You know?
No.
You need a radical history on our side here. Yeah.
And I'm not even necessarily saying Trump's running again for president. So we need a far left communist to come in.
You don't even need a communist.
If Kamala was openly condemning Israel, she would have secured significantly more votes.
Oh, yes.
Condemn Israel, stand by Medicare for all, stand by those union policies that were good under Biden, and all that kind of stuff.
And also
let Tim Walz speak more, and you'll be fine.
People think this stuff is alienating, but time and time and again, the evidence points out this is the kind of stuff people want to hear.
Yeah.
And they just think they're to engage in it. It's infuriating. Yeah.
Walls,
with one fucking vote in his state, was able to push through free school lunches. He was able make it a trans haven state and so on and so forth. I mean, this is a man who got work done and he's just a normal guy for the most part. But yeah. Ugh.
Yeah,
I hear you.
There was a bit of a delay there. I think you lost connection at one point.
Uh oh. They're trying to get me. The system.
I know.
Yeah, they're trying to silence you. They're pulling the plug.
You're good now, but you went silent for about 5 to 6 seconds, and then just came back with "Trans Haven," and it was totally out of context.
I tried not to laugh. His fit
I think
too
we got
strong.
70% of it.
There he goes.
They're going to be replacing me on the new InfoWars show, The Onion.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
To be honest, though, they're not going to be able to make as much ridiculous shit as when Alex was, the host of the show. But I give them, every bit of credit for buying that shit heap.
I want to frame this because, I did vote for Kamala. I'm not the kind of guy who's gonna take
shit lib.
I know.
I'm just kidding.
I'm not gonna.
You literally are murdering Palestinians as we speak. Damn it!
I'm not the kind of guy that's gonna take.
Oh God! I shouldn't laugh. I shouldn't laugh at that.
It is what it is.
I'll take the milk toast over fascism every time because fascism's the worst possible outcome. It's just clearly. That's not a winner anymore, right? You can't just rely on people like me to carry you.
Vote for us
time.
Because the other guy is worse. Well, you gotta explain to me why I should vote for you.
This is why I'm saying Democrats really struggle with telling a good story. Because there are people who don't understand things the way we're talking about it. And if they don't have a good narrative, they're just not going to show up, you know?
Yeah. I think it worked for Trump and Biden because we just had 4 years of Trump. So saying, vote for me because I'm not what you just had.
And also not
is
to
a
mention
selling
we're
point.
Just coming right out of, we're still in the pandemic, which Orange
Mussolini
over here bungled.
There's 700,000 people died to COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. How many 9/11s is that?
9/11s? it's more deaths than I think everyone involved in the Vietnam War.
Hey guys, can we do some math real quick? Well, so there was a point in time where it was acceptable to start making 9/11 jokes. When do you think it's going to be acceptable to start making COVID jokes?
I don't know.
Today.
Keep in mind, Gilbert Gottfried made a 9/11 joke 2 months after 9/11.
Oh, that was so good. So good.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I'm sorry I was late here. I had to catch a plane. I had to make a stop at the Empire State Building. And that's where the term too soon came from.
Yeah.
And people still laugh. Himself, he went into the aristocrats joke, which that's the joke that saves you. I don't know what to say, but yeah. As for COVID jokes, I mean, we are already making jokes about it as it was happening. Yeah. So
I listen, like, as working as a first responder, we were joking about it during, because I partially think it was a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
You know, we had we had freezer trucks at our public works department full of bodies because the morgues couldn't take them at the speed that they were dying.
So Jesus.
I know that it was bad.
Look,
but we were
with irreverent the culture is and how disconnected people are. I mean, we started making jokes about it as soon as it was happening. No one gives a shit about it. There's no sanctity about that.
If
9/11 were to happen now, I guarantee you people will be making fucking memes about it the day after. No, the minute
I will say. Gen Z is it Gen Z or the Gen Xers? Which is the newest one?
Generation A, but one that's more online. Gen A is still like babies, essentially.
Who's Gen X?
Gen X is the fucking
boomers and millennials.
Oh, okay, never mind. The Gen Zers make me feel like the kids are going to be all right, because some of the memes that I've seen, like this new era of memes, has been like, it's the kind of memes that you can only share to certain people. Like, you wouldn't post to your story unless you're not worried at all. I've been very impressed with some of the memes that I've gotten in my stash over the last couple of years. And
my meme folder is just a cesspit. But what's interesting about my meme folder is that you can definitely tell when they were added. Just like, there's a whole section of like Ukraine war memes. And then there's a whole section of like COVID memes. And it's like, okay, I can see what part of history this came from.
Yeah, timeline, like
what was your childhood trauma?
Measuring
rings. What was my childhood trauma?
Yeah, no, I'm saying
question.
No, that's like, you know, identifying that through the memes that you post.
I think like 90%
Facebook remembers.
I think like 90% of comedy is like delivery, right? It's being able to tell like the correct joke at the correct time in the right way. And like, cause like, I see people like, oh, you can't make like jokes about trans people or anything like that. But it's like, I've seen like trans comedians tell jokes about themselves in the most hilarious way imaginable, arguably in a more spicy way than like Chud comedians do.
I think
it's entirely like the delivery, right?
Yeah, I couldn't do it because my delivery, I could hear a trans person make a joke about trans people and it would be hilarious, and then if I were to say it, it would sound like I was a bigot, partially because I look like one, because I look like one, but like my delivery would not be the same. And I think a lot of it comes with the assumption that you're not punching down.
Right.
There's people who do joke about, like Bill Burr is a perfect example. Bill Burr can say like an arguably like a very edgy joke, but nobody really accuses him unless they're terminally online of being a bigot because they know they've heard him speak on certain issues and they know that he's not a bigot. So when he makes jokes about he has a bit, about the F slur, and I think it's objectively funny, and he's not being homophobic in it. He talks about how like if you were to use that to call a gay person, he'd beat the shit out of you. But it's a normal person could not make that joke, and people laugh at it because they'd be like,
"Yeah,
it sounds like you just want to say it."
There's definitely like there has to be an understanding that you're not coming from a hateful place for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just kind of funny with me with conservatives recently trying to take George Carlin as their own. It's like, you listen to his stuff. He fucking hates. There are multiple skits that he's made basically saying, I hate you people. I don't want you to associate with me. I mean,
yeah.
That one just kind of blows my mind.
They're like peeing off the one bit he had about like feminist magazines or whatever. And they're not looking at all the times where he talks about how much he hates Bush and how much he hates conservatives. It's like,
yeah, his bit on abortion is so fucking relevant to today. It's amazing. These people, they're never going to talk about it. They don't want to. These are the people that were
really disillusioned that Rage Against the Machine were leftist.
Yeah.
Like they didn't consider what machine they were raging against. They just
this is really important. This concept that like, so it's part of this like increasingly low information tribalism kind of vibe of the political division in this country, where like, so anything anti-establishment, when the other team is in power, they're like, that's my media, my entertainment. And they can't parse it in the context in which it was created. They can't like decipher the lyrics and like kind of glean like, what was he talking about? Who is he criticizing here? It's just like the most surface level interpretation of like, oh, they hate the government. Right now, the Democrats are the government.
Right.
I mean, Carlin made it pretty clear.
Never mind, the song was made in 1998.
Yeah. It's like a shocking level of media literacy that goes on.
There's a great moment that I keep referencing to people. When Carlin went on a Bill Maher's Real Time show, first and foremost, Bill Maher.
I know. What a disappointment.
He was always an asshole, but he's just made it more apparent that he's an asshole. Anyways,
I know.
Carlin went on the show, and this is right after Hurricane Katrina. And they had a black woman on the show who was pretty cool. I can't remember her name, sadly. And they had this like shitbag from some like right wing publication basically defending the Bush administration. And then Carlin basically just said, it's not a surprise that rich white people do not give a shit about poor black people. And then he would go on to say that the Bush administration is a criminal fascist gang. And the right wing guy was like, oh, Bill, what are you saying? And, George Carlin was going on about class. And the right wing guy said, well, what are you, Marx all of a sudden? And it's like, oh, my God, are you this fucking stupid, man?
I can't believe I've never heard that.
Yeah, no, type up Bill Maher, George Carlin, Real Time Hurricane Katrina, and you should be able to find it. It's just very funny. I mean, yeah, Carlin, I would say, was probably an anarchist by the end of his life, especially with how grumpy he was. Yeah. But he certainly hated certain people more than other people. I can certainly say that.
You know, I had this conversation the other day because I was talking to somebody about how I forget what I commented on Instagram, but I was talking about how like it was a meme about how tariffs were essentially going to kick us all in the balls.
Oh, Christ.
And I said, like, it's funny that all the Trump voters are complaining about the meme, but none of them can explain how a tariff works.
Right.
And I said Trump voters specifically, not conservatives, because I think there's a difference between, like, a Trump fan and a typical conservative. It's a smaller and smaller.
It's funny. There's, like, a cult of personality there for sure.
Yeah. If there's, and I'll go as far as to say anybody or most people who wear political merchandise out in public, especially when it's not an election season, are people I typically would not want to associate with, regardless of whether it's for the blue or the red.
It's probably a safe bet.
Because at that point, it's like a personality, and you're not going to be fun to hang out with, and you're certainly not going to like me.
Yeah, I mean, I sometimes wear kind of politically coded stuff out there, but
is it blue team or red team? No, not like that.
I have that. I think you know what it is. It's the Protect Trans Kids shirt with like the Bowie.
I'm not talking about that.
Yeah, he's talking about election time.
Shirt and I like
Trump or Kamala stuff. Specifically candidate focused stuff.
No,
I wear political stuff like that all the time. Like that's. To me, I remember
I was in DC many, many years ago at a climate change march, and we were also there for a few days to, like, you know, have kind of a vacation out of it to go to DC. And me and my parents were walking about, and we saw a bunch of, like, teenagers buying Trump hats or whatever. And I just said to my mom, hey, look, it's a little Hitler youth out there. And she, like, you can't say that. It's like, why not? You know, why are you yelling at me? You know I'm right.
Actually, you're left.
Why are you booing? I'm right.
Why yeah, exactly. Booing? That's, I'm the, right, yeah. That's the main.
Your boos mean nothing to me. I've seen what makes you cheer. That's my favorite thing. Like, that's the mentality that I've come to take on, like, running the A Better Way 2A page, because I used to take everything far more personally. And until I realized that the vast majority, but ask Andrew. Like, I would have like rough days.
Oh, yeah. The rejection sensitive dysphoria is very strong sometimes.
Yeah, because the second somebody says something, you know, completely opposed to what my intentions were, I wonder, is that how I'm being perceived? And perception means a lot to me, because people's perception is reality. It doesn't matter what your intentions are. If somebody sees you as something, that's what you are to them, especially nowadays where it's so hard to convince people otherwise. So, I would take things super personally and, you know, say, like, am I doing this wrong? Like, how should I do this? And beneficially, though, like, it also helped me. I reached out to a ton of people to double check, to make sure that I wasn't actually being a piece of shit. And it's actually helped me build a ton of really good relationships. But, yeah, since then, I've just taken the whole, like, if you're a piece of shit, and I'm upsetting you, that's fucking great. Like, yeah, I'm clearly doing something right.
I'm not to blaze you guys too hard here, but I do, like, really respect what you folks do, because it's so easy to fall into the trap of, like, doing, like, chud merchandise. Like Trump engraved 1911s and shit like that. And the fact that you guys don't do that, I really respect. Because, like, that's easy money, right? Like,
1776 will commence again, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
But then again, there's, like, 1.5 million other brands like that. So, quite frankly, it's boring, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just I have said this many times about Jordan, that if he just wanted to make money, like a shit ton of money really quick, there's much easier ways to do that.
There's better grifts.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just talking about this with the folks from Off Color Decals, actually, because
we're actually going to be meeting them in the winter.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that.
The Stop the Bleed class. Mm-hmm. Which is good. I've been in contact with them for a while, but I've never actually met them personally, so it's gonna be nice seeing them for the first time.
I just met them. They've printed our stickers since the beginning, pretty much. Mm-hmm. They're fantastic people.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say enough good about them, but we were just talking about it, how, like, if we wanted to, we can make an ultra right, you know, Etsy, not Etsy probably at this point, but like a conservative store, and just, it would be great to just grift, take money from them and then donate it to charities, like to leftist.
Just say, like, nonsense right-wing slop, and then just
donate the proceeds to, like, Planned Parenthood and stuff. And
this is the covert ops I'm sure you get
nailed on, like, deceptive marketing or something, you know. It's a good idea, though.
Maybe.
Why? Because at that point, it's just your money. What you choose to do with your money is...
We'll take some cheap steel, put them in a nice, like, box or whatever, and then spray paint, like, Trump rules on it. It's like, okay, level 4 plates for sale, $200.
I'm surprised no one's done that yet.
I'm pretty sure, I think there was one person who tried doing that, like, selling shit plates.
There's TikTok plates that 100% will kill you. Like, that grift is real.
Look, here, I'm gonna pay you $50 just to shoot yourself, and you'll save you, like, $100 more. I don't know. Also, speaking of, like, ads, I've been getting ads for, like, some new, like, flexible body armor from a bunch of like gun tubers or whatever, and they're just shooting them. It's like, oh, look, nothing's going through. I don't know if any of you guys have been getting those ads
or
whatever.
Seen that.
Okay, no, it's mostly on YouTube, so unless you watch YouTube a lot, you're not getting them, I guess.
I finally, after years, subscribed to YouTube Premium because I was tired of watching. Dude, I hated it. I hate it. I hate that I've been
welcome to the premium room.
Forced to do this. And then immediately after, Amazon Prime starts showing ads on movies now.
I have a potential solution, but I don't know if I'm allowed to mention it on the podcast here. So
we'll edit it out if it's too spicy.
I feel like I know what you're about to say, and I've also joked about that specific thing. I'm like,
we prefer copyright reform activism. It's a form of direct action. It's a political speech, actually.
Yeah, right. You wouldn't download a gun, would you?
Yes, 100%.
It's my property to do nothing with, and I'm going to do nothing with it forever.
Yeah.
Ooh-hoo. I would absolutely download a gun, though, if I could, but sadly, my state would send policemen to my door.
Same. I would love to just, like,
Smeagly, did you see they were trying to, like, get background checks for buying 3D printers going in our state?
Yes. It was last year, right? Last year?
No, it was earlier this year. Well, there was like a local
politician. Keep in mind, we now have to do background checks just to buy fucking ammunition in the state.
Don't get me started.
So it's basically just a tax on ammo.
I will get you started.
We've been started. We've started an hour and 38 minutes ago.
Yeah, we should start the podcast, huh?
Oh, yeah. You guys want to start the episode?
Oh, shit. I mean, I was also gonna say, like, it doesn't really matter because some of our members will just go down to Pennsylvania to buy ammo and body armor and not worry about that, just bring it back up. But for those of the people who don't want to travel down there, it's like, oh, great, I got to pay the extra fucking tax on this. That's fun.
Yeah, you're paying more either way.
How's the law work? So obviously, if you go to out of state to buy a gun that doesn't require a permit and you own it in your state, that's illegal.
Yes.
But if it's like a banned gun, if it's a banned gun.
Yeah.
If you were to buy a pistol that was legal in your state in another state, there'd be no law broken there, right?
Well, you need a pistol permit to own a pistol in New York. So if you had a pistol New York and no permit, it would be illegal.
No. Yes. But say you had, if you have a pistol permit in New York and you go and buy a gun in Pennsylvania, I'm asking a stupid question. Overanalyzing.
Federally, I think you would have to list it on the permit, but that would be it. If you have a pistol.
This is a problem even earlier than that. Federally, you can't buy a handgun outside of a state that you have. Like, if you don't have residence in that state, you can't buy a handgun there, and you can only buy long guns in, I think, adjacent states.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to have residency in the state that you're buying a handgun in.
Okay, but what about a long gun? It has to be an adjacent.
Long
state.
Gun, I think it's adjacent. It may.
I don't think you're right because different. I'm not gonna say that on the podcast.
I may be wrong about the long gun thing, but I am sure about the handgun.
I think you're wrong about the long gun thing.
With armor. You're not legally allowed to purchase or take possession of it in New York, but if you purchase and take possession outside of New York and bring it to New York, that's legal. Because possession in itself is not illegal. Although there has been a push to just make possession illegal. So if a cop raids your house and they see you have a plate carrier, that would be like a felony.
That's all because of the fucking Buffalo shooter and all that. It's like, instead of focusing on the problem of Nazism and that shit, no, let's just ban body armor.
Yeah, because if there's no body armor, there's no Nazis, right?
That was the sacrificial lamb in that case.
Like a Nazi that wants to shoot up a bunch of innocent people is going to give a shit about the law.
Well, that's the conversation that we have all the time is the laws are clearly not working to stop these people from doing that because they don't care. You know, I hate to beat a dead horse, but murder is illegal. You know, it feels so.
What is that? I can't remember. Some politician posted on Twitter at some point, like, you know, when you're hunting ducks, you can only carry, you can only have three rounds in your shotgun magazine. It's amazing that ducks have more legal protections than children in our schools.
Oh my God.
Like, buddy, you can't hunt kids with shotguns or AR's. That's the ultimate legal protection.
Think about the problem we run into is that, like, these aren't like the kinds of social issues that you can just legislate away with a stroke of a pen. There's like systemic problems that aren't being addressed that lead to these sorts of behaviors.
Yeah, of course. There's a systemic issue that ends up convincing somebody to end up in a chat room with 16 FBI agents planning to kill to kidnap the governor of Michigan.
They're
I agree 100% though.
On a more self-harm end of things, like, there's so many like Americans that blow their brains out every year. Are we not going to talk about why? Yeah. Is it just
the fact that they own guns? Don't question it. Don't question
it. Are we not going to address the kind of deeper ennui that's happening there? Like,
yeah, this is a question that I've proposed to gun control advocates, and I've never been able to get a straight answer out of is if gun ownership it equals danger and you are at a higher risk to kill yourself, why is it that similar guns per household countries have in Europe have significantly lower suicide rates than we do?
Yeah,
so like almost every house has a gun, which means there's at least one way to kill yourself for multiple family members in each household. But I think it was some astronomically low number. It was like one or three firearm suicides 1 year. Meanwhile, we have 16,000.
Yeah.
You know, that, why is that? If you could answer that, then I think we'll also find an answer for a lot of the other numbers.
And I think there's also a lot of like misunderstanding of like in play with statistics. Like, you know, they'll say like owning a gun increases like the likelihood of like, death in the household. And it's like, well, yeah, that's kind of like how having things in the presence of you happens, right?
Yeah.
Driving a car significantly increases your likelihood of getting in a car accident.
Or having a pool in your backyard.
Eating a burger significantly increases your chance of heart disease.
I was just about to say, consistently eating cheeseburgers is going to be far more dangerous than owning a gun.
Like, that's just like welcome to being alive and being around things. Yeah. Like,
because one eventually will kill you, the other one won't.
Jordan, this episode might be lost now to the great bumblefuck. But have you had a bit from one episode where it was just the two of us, where you're like, you know, we were joking about how like not having knives reduces your chances of getting stabbed, not having pools reduces your chances of getting drowned, and you were like, not having a blender in your house reduces your chances of getting fed into that blender bit by bit until you're completely liquefied.
yeah, by a serial blender killer. Yeah.
One of my favorite websites is
your community reduces your chances of getting serial murdered by X amount percent, but whatever. I mean, Jesus.
One of my favorite websites is a site called Spurious Correlations. And it's like just taking two completely random things that have nothing to do with each other and seeing like that they statistically line up on a chart. Like one was like the purchase of grated cheese over this period of time correlated with the like the death rate of people being suffocated by their own bed sheets. It's like stuff like that.
Also, let's not forget hard to get a gun country, Japan. Oh, wait a minute. Am I still? Uh-oh.
You're good.
I can hear you.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. Let's not forget in a hard to get a gun country like Japan, that didn't stop some fucking madman from bluffing off their prime minister.
No.
What a fucking hero.
Gun.
Yeah. That gun
an electrically fired.
That was a fallout ass gun. Can I read some of these spurious correlations?
It's also funny, just on a side note, that after people learned why he killed them, everyone was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Can I read you guys some of these spurious correlations?
Sure, let's hear.
you've reignited. I remember this website. It was like back when there was a website to find random websites. This was one of the websites that you could find on that. What was that?
Stumble Upon, right?
Yes. Oh my God, I totally forgot about that. Yep, I used to love Stumble Upon. Holy shit. And then it just left.
I'm guessing
it was an app.
Did people just keep getting porn sites or something? And that's
no, you could make it like you could.
It's
curated
to whatever you were looking for.
For work, and then you could crank it up from there.
Yeah, yeah. But it was amazing. I would find
when the internet
such
wasn't
cool
controlled
websites.
By like four corporations.
Yeah. Oh my God, that was so good. Yeah. So this one is the popularity of the first name Johnny also correlates with burglaries in New Hampshire from 1985 to 2020. The number of babies named Johnny has decreased significantly, and also the burglaries in New Hampshire decreased at the same rate. Here, hold
said,
on.
Listen, David, like the right's talking about immigrants. We got to watch out for Johnny, apparently.
Yeah, I was about to say something bad as well. Okay.
Yeah, it literally follows it. It literally follows it to a T. You've got this little jump here in 2010 where the burglaries shot up a little bit. Johnny.
That must have been one particular Johnny just working too hard.
This must be the site where all these fucking racists get their data on like race
100%.
And crime stuff.
Oh, yeah. The Johnny, that you know.
Popularity of the first world problems meme correlates with Google search for zombie.
First world problems.
Oh, zombies. What a first world problem.
See, this
is
my plan. If the zombie apocalypse happens, no one cares.
One of my favorite memes on that was like, it was like a shot of The Walking Dead or something like that, where they're all standing on a car and there's like a sea of zombies. And there's an arrow pointing to the people on the car saying where you think you are. And then it points to a random part in the crowd going where you actually are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Holy shit, this would be horrible for the economy.
Yogurt consumption and the popularity of the first name Ella. That's guys, right. I'm gonna link this in the show notes. You have to go to this.
I'm glad I reignited
website.
This in you.
Oh my
God. I like that they've got the ChatGPT justification below it.
Oh stop.
Oh my God. All right, we'll do one more and then see. Master's degrees awarded in journalism correlates with the gender pay gap in the U.S.
Oh, I like, knew what? Those fucking journalists were fucking bourgeois.
Wait, is there a way that you can, like, search? Is there a way that you can search for specific ones? I thought there was. Oh, total number of successful Mount Everest climbs correlates with the hot dogs consumed by Nathan's hot dog eating competition champion.
Jesus Christ,
as more people
there was just a giant fucking uptick from one guy.
Look at that. That's awesome.
I think we should build a policy around this, honestly.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, there's data to support it, so. Wow. Well, that's awesome. If you're listening at home, we showed that on the show on the
yes
YouTube
podcast, but, the great known visual medium.
Yeah,
I saw this thing the other day. It was like, I did an analog podcast with the boys.
Yeah, raw dogged a podcast.
We just raw dogged the podcast. Oh. We just sat there and talked for 3 hours. What was that? Oh, War is a Racket. Nice.
Yeah. Well, that's where I get my name from. What do you expect? I also have
I know Smedley Butler. That was drilled into us in boot camp.
Yeah, I also have the version that has a foreword by Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yes.
I would vote for him for president.
Yeah. Jesse Ventura is one of the most based.
Yeah, no, I love Jesse. He's only gotten better as time has gone on.
I was in the U.S. Navy SEALs. I saw the kinds of things that America was doing. Yeah, he was great.
Vince McMahon was a loser from the beginning, all right?
Wow, that was good. That was good.
I love Jesse. He's pro-Ukraine. He's pro-Palestine. He didn't buy into the whole Trump bullshit.
Jesse Ventura was... He was Jesse once Ventura, very popular in libertarian circles, but now, unsurprisingly, has been alienated.
That's
unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, when he was governor of Minnesota, he visited... Cuba, And there are pictures of him and Fidel Castro standing next to each other. And it's like, all right, good. Anyone who's against this bullshit fucking embargo is a good person, in my opinion.
He's the kind of person, he's like the great example of someone that I probably wouldn't agree with on everything, but I could work with him, you know?
Oh, certainly. I probably wouldn't agree with everything he says about, like, conspiracies, but I would certainly love to have a beer with the guy.
He seems like a reasonable person.
yes.
Oh, yeah, God, if you bring him on, I gotta be here. I would love to be in his presence.
Hey, BWTA roundtable.
Sure, that's your magnum opus. If you get Jesse Ventura on the podcast, you have to end the podcast. It's not going to get better from there, right?
That's the peak.
No, it's all downhill from there. Absolutely. I wonder who our magnum opus so far was, but I don't want to say it here because I don't want everybody else to feel bad. I don't know who it would be.
The SRA, obviously.
Well, specifically the Northern New York chapter of the upstate New York chapter of the SRA.
What do you see, Ghost?
Oh, nothing. I was looking at one of the posters I had there.
Oh, okay.
It's like, did they find you?
Yeah. Don't question it. I have swatted some protection here.
Not a whole lot.
I'm not going down without a fight. It may not be much of a fight, but it will be one.
God, my dog just ripped ass. I thought she took a shit in here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we definitely need to know that, bud. It's like, hey, I just got back. Just took a massive shit. We don't need to know that.
On that, thank you guys for coming on the show.
clearly
we're out of material.
It's only God damn it. The podcast here.
My dog just took a huge smelly shit.
Oh man.
Oh Christ.
Anyway, we're in the upstate New York chapter of the SRA.
Join your local chapter. I was going to say it doesn't cost you a thing, but actually it does cost you money. But hey, you got to pay for
it. It's cheap though, right?
It's $35 a year or $10 or $5 a month. Depends on what you want to pay. So
costs you a lot less than losing your gun rights.
Exactly. Yeah. Join.
All right, there you go.
Get yourself into a decent community to shoot with. And sadly, we can't give people free guns here, but you'll at least get some experience.
Yeah, for sure.
We can't give you free guns.
Yet.
But I can give you free experience.
I will say, if there is some anonymous millionaire / billion out there who wants to give us money, we will take it. As long as there are no strings attached, we will take that money. All I have to say.
Well, I mean, honestly, I would take it with some strings attached.
What are you expecting me not to use it? It's like, no, I'm not going to take, no, out of principle, I can't use it. Fuck that. I'll take whatever I can get as long as there's no strings attached. Sure.
I'm okay with some strings, to be honest. I'm at that point in my life. I'm okay with some strings.
You've reached that.
As long as there's not video of it. As long as there's no video. I have a daughter who's going to grow up one day.
There's video of everything.
I know this guy. I know this guy named Edward Gregorian. He could probably hook you up.
Who's that?
You don't know about that? The Tenet Media.
Is that
thing?
The Lord of War guy?
That was the Tim Pool, Dave Rubin, all those people.
Oh, the fake Russian guy that those idiots
took a bunch of money from like this Russian guy who was posing to be as someone else to basically push pro Russian or American destabilizing propaganda.
Yes, yes, yes. I do remember that.
That just goes to show how fucking like innocuous it is. I completely forgot who it was. Oh, Christ.
Any day where Tim Pool gets made to look like a fool is a good day.
So I mean, that's pretty much every day.
Yeah, I know, but at his own expense, you know, where he's like, oh.
Have you guys seen pictures of him without his beanie on?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean.
Dude, it's like clearly really, it's like, whatever, but like it's clear he's like really insecure about it. Like,
yeah, his head just looks super weird. Super weird,
man. As somebody with a weird head, I can empathize. Yeah. Anyway, guys, normally we end this podcast with a little tradition here where we ask you if you were to give a piece of advice to people, because there's two of you, feel free to do it individually. It doesn't have to be gun related. It doesn't have to be related to the SRA. But if you had a piece of advice for folks, what would that advice be?
Just, you know, anything. Think something you think people are sleeping on that they got to know.
Oh, yeah. A
little nugget of wisdom.
Go ahead, Smeagly. I gotta think about this.
I was just about to say you go. I'm still thinking, to be honest.
Listen, I don't know if my life together. Fine. I don't have any advice for you.
So you're saying it doesn't have to be gun related. It can be anything.
It could be gun related. It doesn't have to be gun related.
I guess, like, I think, like, the life's too short, right? Like, I think you need to, like, focus on things that bring you joy in life, right? Like, there's a lot of human misery comes from people feeling like they don't have, like, a direction or a goal, but, like, you gotta take pleasure in the little things, because, like, you can't count on the world always being, like, a bright sunny place, right? There's people who have it way worse than us in the world that still manage to find some little joy in their life. And you have to be able to continue on. You have to be able to do that. That could be friends. That could be your hobbies or your little comforts at home. But you got to have something that keeps you going.
Yeah. I love that. That's a good one. Smedley, you've got big shoes to fill. Hopefully yours doesn't suck.
Basically, my recommendation is find a place to physically buy this book with cash.
Yes.
It's a very funny book. It's got a lot of fun stuff in here. That's when I do put this up, because this is a joke.
It's not a joke. I literally sell that book on my website.
Okay, yeah. But just for our sake, probably don't show that. Jokes aside.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, jokes aside, join your local SRA chapter, get to know some folks, you know, especially if you're in a place where you don't have a lot of people and you want a community to talk about stuff like this too, you know, we're open. And hey, if you have the tenacity to do it, set up your own chapter if you can. Just find some other people that are interested. And that's pretty much about it for me. I'm glad that you guys had us on. It was definitely a fun time. We probably derailed our train more than Amtrak ever has. So
no, that's where the show thrives.
Not that effect. So, you know, I'm not going to even blame you for that, Smoothie.
There's a train. There's a page I follow. I think it's a train out of Florida called, like, the Bright Line or Bright Wheel or something like that, where it just posts this page run by a person, posts whenever it hits a person. And it just,
what the
it's
fuck?
Like,
okay.
Brightline hit another fucking person. And, like, that's the name, that's the poll post.
That reminds me of a YouTube channel that just posts whenever a bridge, like, peels off the top of a truck.
12 foot 9 or 11 foot 9, whatever it's called.
The city I live in has a bridge that's similar to that. It's gone. It's destroyed at least 100 trucks in its history, and it's just, it's, you know, 100-0. It's undefeated.
It's a veteran. It's a veteran bridge.
The bridge does not come down.
No, there's no end to human stupidity, and unfortunately, all of that drives. Most of them drive.
Yeah. But seriously, thanks so much for having us on. I bought one of your iFacts. I think that's great. I love what you guys do.
Oh, shit, yeah.
I bought multiple swag from you guys too, so I'm a customer. So
I'm gonna say
much appreciated.
I say this all the time. I'm gonna say it again here on the podcast. 99% of the work of A Better Way to A is Jordan. I literally just help with the podcast.
You help more than that though. You've got your emotional support. Man, more than you know.
I also buy a lot of stuff from the store.
Yeah, he also buys, like, everything. He's like, he's got, I've never seen him wear, like, a non-A Better Way 2A shirt. It'll literally be like a random video he'll send me of his kid, and in the corner of the picture I'll see he's got an A Better Way 2A logo on his shirt.
He's
like,
becoming a walking billboard.
I am.
Yeah, yeah. If you guys ever want to have
the ever smaller billboard, every day I see him.
You go.
What? It's just a stupid joke.
Don't worry about it.
Because he's losing weight, so they said he's a smaller, ever smaller
billboard.
Shrinking billboard. I'm getting less and less for my money.
It's like a NASCAR driver, but all of his ads are just Better Way 2A stuff all over him.
Yes, 100%.
Rip Dale Earnhardt.
I love you. I literally said, we Our chat, we have a signal chat. Can I? I'm gonna minimize this so it just. Oh well, never mind. It shows your last name. We literally were like, I said, Smedley, you were talking at one point, and Andrew spoke over you for like 4 seconds straight, and would not give up. So I was like, try not to literally talk over him. And he goes, I think I have a delay. Sorry. And I said, you're great. And he goes, you're fantastic. I just said, I love you. And he sent me. Yeah, we're just constantly.
I'm not like that, man. Maybe bye, but I just met you, okay?
Yeah, yeah, well, dude, come on. Well, at least take me to dinner first, all right?
No, I like food, but no. I'm not being entrapped by this.
No, you're. I'm saying I was saying I love Andrew.
Okay,
in the chat, but it's literally just.
I wasn't going to correct you. I thought I liked where this was going.
No, yeah. You bastard, Jesus.
Just two dudes supporting each other.
Just the two gays in the podcast to make it all about them, huh?
Oh man, next thing you know, you're gonna want your own month too.
I know, right?
I think they should have 2 months.
I think they should have
International Podcasting Awareness Month.
Yeah, that is also that's the second Pride month.
I'm actually a podcast American.
It's like not entirely wrong.
No, I posted this thing the other day. I tagged like our last 4 guests, including Maryam Abulfazli, who like laughed at it. It's a sign of respect in white man's culture when they invite you on their podcast.
Yeah, I like that.
If I wanted to show respect, I would have worn my best polo and slacks to this, but.
I like the camo better. It's more formal in this context.
Yeah, it is. It's like a suit, really.
Yeah, if I wanted to do it really good, I would have done this outside, but it's a little cold, so
a shot of nature, and then like at the very end you just like emerge from the bushes in your ghillie suit.
He's been talking the whole time, but it's like one of those, like,
pull up the green screen and it just shows that I'm in my room the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. I imagined it as like one of those like find the sniper pictures, you know, like where it's like a landscape and you're looking for the sniper who's in a ghillie suit somewhere or some kind of camo, but it's Smedley talking to us in a podcast, just in the prone for 2 hours straight in the woods, and he pops up at the last minute. Anyway, on that note, we were supposed to end on the dog fart. Now we had the actual conversation.
good.
I can talk about my dog fart again.
Don't.
I still smell it.